You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. So how you feeling? Nursing a candy hangover from Halloween? Or some other kind of hangover? Well, how about we go get some fresh air at the cemetery? Yes, this is an appropriate day to visit Hollywood Forever on Santa Monica Boulevard. It is Dia de los Muertos, the traditional Mexican holiday that honors the lives of the dearly departed. And last weekend, thousands gathered here at the final resting place for so many Angelenos, including the likes of Judy Garland, Cecil B. DeMille. Today, it's quiet. But wait, what's that? Over there in the distance, is that a... It's a cat, and he's not alone.
I think we have close to 60. They are all feral. They've all been here for a very long time.
So. Dozens of feral cats, and a few other critters too, make their homes here at this unique cemetery-slash-cultural gathering spot. Well, KCRW's Danielle Chiriguayo went on the prowl to find out why.
Let's make one thing clear. It's not just cats here. Some of the living here are scaly, others are furry, some are feathered.
We have the 53 peafowls. We have about 20 koi. We have maybe close to 40 turtles. And we have the 5 cayugas.
Eddie Martinez is a funeral director, event coordinator, and get this, head animal caretaker. And those cayugas he's talking about, those are cayuga ducks.
We have the 2 swans, Helen and Zeus. We have 1 rabbit. What else do we have? At one point, we had 2 roosters running around through here, which were rehomed. We have a guinea fowl appeared here one day. We had close to 9 rabbits, and those were all rehomed.
It's a laundry list of critters roaming these lush green grounds. But where did they all come from? For that, we have to go back to the turn of the century. The 20th century, that is. Hollywood Forever first opened its doors back in 1899, way before this neighborhood turned into the concrete jungle it is today. Tyler Cassidy, Hollywood Forever's president, says there's always been animals here.
Where the lake and the Fairbanks Reflection Pool are actually natural wetlands, swamps. So they would have been seasonal kind of wetlands with the water coming straight down from where the Hollywood sign is to here.
Egyptian and Canadian geese migrate here while domesticated ducks moved in at some point after one random Easter. When Cassidy bought the cemetery with this business partner, Yogu Kanthaya, 25 years ago, they introduced peacocks and koi fish. They were looking to beautify the place, which they did, but with it came a tale of murder and betrayal.
And we bought a white peacock and a white peahen, and she named them Sid and Nancy, and then 4 blue peacocks. And all of the blue peacocks killed Sid and mated with Nancy, and that has led to all of our various blue and white colors and variations we have here.
Ah, the circle of life. Sorry, Sid. I guess you weren't vicious enough. It's not just the animals that make Hollywood Forever unique. Besides the enormous Dia de los Muertos festival, they host summer movie screenings, concerts at the Masonic Lodge. The cemetery even offers yoga classes. And it's donations from those yoga classes that help pay for animal care. It costs between $2,000 and $5,000 a month for animal operations, including food, water, and veterinary care.
A month we get close to 30 bags of cat food. And we order 6 cases of 40 cans of wet food. And we have 1 rabbit. That dude we just go to the grocery for that guy. He just gets lettuce and carrots, and he's good.
Take a closer look at the grounds here, and you'll see how embedded these animals are into the ecosystem. Custom-built cat houses with scratching posts nestled between graves, hollow lakeside rocks that koi and turtles hide inside of. The peacocks even have multi-story cages where they sleep on the weekends.
If you go midday, you go by one of the food bowls that has all the cat food, you'll see the swan, the peacock, and the squirrel all in the same bowl eating together, and 2 feet away will be a cat because they don't mess with the swans. They're like a giant bird.
As for the dozens of cats on site, the cemetery helps get them all fixed through a system called trap, neuter, return. This place might feel like a wildlife refuge, but its staff here wants to make one thing crystal clear. This isn't a place to ditch your unwanted pets. It's a concern that Eddie, Tyler, and others at Hollywood Forever constantly stress to this reporter. Just last month, someone abandoned half a dozen kittens here.
Don't just show up and leave your pets thinking that this is a better situation for them, because most of the time it's not. This is a whole new environment for them. They don't know how to get around. They don't know where to go, you know?
But the wild animals have adapted to the cemetery, and they're kind of living the good life. The staff has created a sanctuary, and that care goes both ways.
There's also a kind of a paradise zoo where these kitty cats do get to roam freely. As many times as I see it, I will still stop and wonder when a peacock spreads its feathers and does its little vibrating dance. It always, after however many years, produces a sense of awe. So I think it's a good place and a good setting to have those symbols of life around us.
In this place of grief, as Tyler puts it, these creatures are a source of comfort for all who roam the grounds.
It's just an antidote to death because they're so alive. I just feel better when I see a cat. These are all things that I think help keep us on the living side of feeling through what's going on here, because what's going on here is the, you know, the hardest part of life, the end.
From Hollywood Forever, LA's unofficial zoo, I'm Danielle Chiriguayo for KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with Greater LA, and we're going to stick around for a little longer at Hollywood Forever and take a visit inside the cemetery's columbarium. Now, that's a building kind of like a mausoleum, but it only houses ashes, where another of their unusual events is taking place, this time an art show featuring the work of noted LA fetish and fashion photographer Rick Castro. KCRW's Juliana Mayo paid a visit and brings us this story.
When you see Rick Castro, all 6 feet plus of his platform-booted, black-clad, and dreadlocked frame, can be a little intimidating.
You are at Rick Castro Forever, which is my photographic retrospective of life and death here at the historic columbarium of Hollywood Forever Cemetery.
He's a quiet and thoughtful fellow, known for his black and white photography of everything from street hustlers and the queer fetish scene to high fashion campaigns. When I visited him the other day, he was carefully setting up an afternoon tea amidst his show in Hollywood Forever's columbarium, complete with antique sterling silver teapot, but more on that later. The building itself is moody and gorgeous, with walls lined floor to ceiling with little cubbies, they call them niches, of varying sizes that have glass fronts so you can see the cremated remains, mementos, and photos of deceased people inside. A fountain burbles in the background, and vines snake throughout the wrought iron railings. And mixed in amongst this scene is Castro's latest show.
The exhibition is my photos from my archives from 1986, which is when I started taking photos, to 2022.
He pitched the show to the cemetery's co-owner and president, Tyler Cassidy, 2 years ago. So it's been a long time in the making. And then it took nearly 2 months to install all of his pieces.
I have them in the empty niches in the columbarium. So to have that glass removed, I would say almost all the spaces, all the 86 spaces, the glass had never been removed before. So, you know, some of the screws were, you know, frozen in. So it was quite a feat. It was quite a challenge.
During those 2 months of setup, he became a fixture in the space and got to experience the reactions of mourners visiting their loved ones to his work.
I met this Russian mother and daughter who her father is here and the rest of the family. And she was crying. And then she says, oh, this is your work. It's in, you know, some of my photos is right next to her father. And she says, it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. It gives this place life.
His work in the show covers several themes, all of which kind of point back to death and the ceremony around it.
One theme is portraits of family and loved ones that are no longer with us, like my mother and the love of my life, Joey Napakowski, who I photographed in 1988, and I lost him to AIDS in 1992. You know, something about being here makes you cry. And, you know, it's just really interesting, like a good cry. And it's just something about it. I think it's the quietness and the calm. And then you just start to, like, think about stuff.
Castro took me on a tour through the cavernous space that he's spent so much time decorating and making his own, with flowers, feathers, even his own death mask, pointing out some of his favorite pieces, including a portrait of his mother, who died at age 98. In one of the niches, he displays two photos of her, 50 years apart.
So this is my mother, B, in 1940. She's 19 years old.
In the worn black and white photo, you see her with a giant smile on her face, the picture of 1940s glamour.
And then I recreated the exact same photo, which I grew up with. I used to see this photo every day. This is in 1990 when she's 80 years old.
You could not convince me she was 80 in the second picture. They looked nearly identical. In both photos, she looks like a classic pinup with dramatic victory rolls in her hair that wouldn't look out of place in today's LA rockabilly scene. Even when he's working with family, he manages to mix in some of his commercial work as a fashion photographer as well.
So this is my father. This is Al Castro. And this is 2014 when he was only 93 years old. And I used him as a model for the Rick Owens campaign. And he didn't understand, but he did it, obviously. He didn't like the photos.
The portraits of his father for the minimalist fashion designer are stark black and white images that bring to mind late-in-life portraits of Georgia O'Keeffe. They're tucked away next to urns and mementos and surrounding niches, giving them a ceremonial feel.
The other theme is mass, because that's the theme for the Dia de los Muertos celebration this year, is the mass of Zacatecas. And my mother's family is from Zacatecas, so there's that connection as well.
This shows up in some of his images, like a color photo of his black cat, Piwacket, who's shown in a white coffin surrounded by red roses, and through other imagery. Just don't call it religious.
Well, I'm definitely into pageantry and drama and ritual, but that's not a religious, you know, they can't take credit for that. I think religion takes credit for everything. But to me, that's queer sensibility.
Queer icons are his final theme, with nods to living people like body art performance artist Ron Athey, and deceased people like Holly Woodlawn, the transgender Warhol superstar and Velvet Underground muse who's interred here.
A cemetery is a very mainstream venue. It's basically like a public park. So it was very important for me to have queer imagery in a mainstream location. But I want to acknowledge that there's queer people here and there's a distinct queer sensibility, which I, you know, present with aplomb, and I always have, and I push it maybe a little bit more than I need to, but it's important for people to just accept it as another part of who people are.
And now back to that sterling silver teapot. Castro shot Holly Woodlawn for the Advocate magazine in 1989. The high contrast image is pure drama, almost like a Greta Garbo headshot. She looks dreamily at the photographer, hand posed on her chest. It's a lot, in the best way. And recently, an eclectic crew of her admirers gathered in a corner of the Columbarium to celebrate her birthday with an afternoon tea hosted by Castro.
Happy birthday.
John Schoening and his partner collect Castro's work and love Hollywood Lawn.
She was this trailblazing transgender superstar back when there was no word even for transgender. And she was breaking boundaries and she was courageous.
Daniel DiCrisio, a platinum blonde tressed hairstylist to the stars, arrived in all black with a hot pink tank top to liven things up a bit. He was also a fan of the two.
Oh my God, Rick and Holly, it's like they both are on that same avenue and they're both taking everybody on this journey that it's not for everyone. But I'll tell you something, if you find it, it'll be for you.
Rick Castro's own journey has taken him from hanging out as a teenager in a then crumbling Hollywood Forever of the 1970s to the current curated show sponsored by the cemetery. You could say he's carved out his own artistic niche in life's columbarium.
Holly came from Miami, FLA, hitchhiked her way across the USA, plucked her eyebrows on the way, shaved her legs, and he was a she. She said, hey, baby, walk on the wild side.
From Hollywood Forever for KCRW, I'm Juliana Mayo.
Rick Castro Forever is set to run through the end of November at Hollywood Forever's Columbarium. You can head on over to our website, kcrw.com/GLA, for more information. More now of Greater LA and our special episode on this Day of the Dead. And tradition is more than an altar and a remembrance, it's food. Of course it's food. For the past few weeks, bakeries all across Los Angeles have been serving up a delectable Dia de los Muertos treat. It's called Pan de Muerto, or Bread of the Dead. It's the traditional Mexican sweetbread eaten in celebration of Dia de los Muertos. And here with me to talk about all things pan and where to get the best ones in LA is multimedia journalist and panaderia explorer Jeanette Villafana. She wrote a tell-all about Pan de Muerto for L.A. Taco, including a list of the best places to get it all around Greater L.A. Jeanette, welcome to you. Wishing you a commemorative Dia de los Muertos.
Thank you. Thank you so much again for having me here. I'm excited to talk all things Pan de Muerto.
Yeah, it sounds delectable for sure. So for anyone who's not familiar with the Mexican Day of the Dead, I mean, tell us how Pan de Muerto plays into this tradition.
Yeah, I mean, you can't talk about Day of the Dead without talking about the altares and altars that people create, right? And this is where people put their loved ones' pictures up to remember them. But also, a huge part of these ofrendas and altars are the food, the offerings that we give our loved ones that are supposed to help them and fuel them on their way home to us. One of the traditions that is always included on an ofrenda, no matter what kind of other offerings you're putting up, is pan de muerto. There's different versions, but legend has it that before this bread was created, the Aztec Empire was known for doing a lot of human sacrifices as offerings to the gods. And when the Spanish came, they, of course, rejected these such ceremonies and instead created their version of pan de muerto. Now, the version that they created was a wheat-based bread that was similar to the one we know now today. It was still covered in sugar, but the sugar was actually red to kind of, so it's supposed to symbolize the blood. And then as far as the actual bread itself, the circular sphere shape of the bread is actually supposed to represent the cycle and circle of life and death. And then there's like a little ball in the center of the bread, and that's supposed to represent the skull. And then the canelillas, which are the little bones that you see, there's like four bones that run across the bread, are supposed to represent the bones and tears of our loved ones. And it's just tradition to put one or two of these in your ofrenda. And of course, it's not just as an offering, but it's also very delicious to enjoy. And a bunch of bakeries have transformed pan de muerto. I was trying all kinds of pan de muerto for like 2 weeks, and it's delicious.
Yeah. It's fascinating to me, Jeanette, because it seems like so many cultures have a connection, not only between food, but also bread and sweets mm-hmm. and a memorial for somebody whom they love and miss. And, you know, we talk about the altar that is there for Dia de los Muertos, but also the fact that, you know, what we eat is a big part of family, is a big part yes. of connection, right?
And it's what we do now, too. You know, when you think of family gatherings, whether that's a birthday party or just a simple barbecue on a Saturday, that's how we as humans connect. We connect being together. We connect over food, over a drink, over tradition, over sharing each other's traditional foods. Food is just so intertwined into Dia de los Muertos, but really just life in general. It's how we connect and get to know others as well.
Talk a little bit about, to me, how pan de muerto is made. I mean, bread is bread, right? There are sweet breads all through different cultures around the world, right? My ancestors, the Greeks, have a sweet bread, and the Jewish people have a sweet bread. You know what I'm saying? So there are different sweet breads. How is pan de muerto made?
Yeah, it's very similar to pan dulce, like the texture of it.
It is? Okay.
It's very similar to pan dulce. It usually has like an egg, like for example, the sesame one has like an egg wash, and then they just sprinkle sesame over it. And the sesame one is actually not that sweet. It's usually just like a hint, just the perfect amount of hints of sweetness. Now, when you go to the sugar covered ones, they're all kinds. Like in Northgate, they had one that was filled with cajeta, and that's totally something new that I've never seen done.
For those who don't know, what is cajeta?
It's like a sweet, almost like caramel, but made out of goat milk.
Oh, that sounds
wonderful. It is delicious. Wow. Yeah, it's super delicious. And you would think it's going to be too sweet because the pan is already covered in sugar, but it's perfect.
Yeah.
Now, there's other bakeries who completely skip out the sugar-covered pan de muerto, and they do loaves of bread, and they cover it in icing, like colorful icing. They'll decorate, you know, like the skulls and things on the bread.
What are some of the places that you recommend for the pan de muerto? I mean, where should you go to get the best pan?
The best.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine, is it the place that you would go for the best pan dulce? Or what? I mean, how would you?
Yes.
It is? Okay.
When it comes to pan de muerto, you can't just talk about the bread, like that specific bread itself. Like the bakery itself is great. But I think at the top of my head, you know, Los Angelitos Bakery in Huntington Park, they've been around since 1992, and their recipe has been here since they opened. It's perfectly moist. It's not dry. It's nice and fluffy. And they offer both like giant pan de muerto bread and then smaller mini versions of it. And then another staple is La Chapala in East Los Angeles. I mean, I'm telling you, walking into that bakery, you're automatically greeted by that smell of like bread. And it's just amazing. And the family is amazing. I think one of the things that I enjoyed about creating this list was that a lot of these businesses, if not all, are family owned. So these recipes that you're tasting have been in their families for decades. And you can taste the quality and the love that goes into the bread. And I think that's really important. You want to make sure that the hands that are making your bread, that you're going to offer your loved one, you know, is tip top and the best. And it's doing it with love and intention.
I got to say, Jeanette, what a sweet gig. No pun intended. Or pun intended.
Pun intended, yeah.
writing for the LA Taco story that you did on Pan de Muerto. And I want to thank you for your time and talking with us today. Jeanette Villafana, multimedia journalist and Pan de Muerto extraordinaire. Jeanette, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. And Feliz Dia de los Muertos to all of you as well.
Yes, we wish that as well for you. That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, mañana, EVs are making a big dent in the market, but they can also be really expensive. That could be a problem going forward. That story tomorrow right here on Greater LA. I hope you'll join us online, too, anytime at kcrw.com/GLA. Tell us how you're doing. Maybe you have a story idea. You can suggest it there. And, of course, grab the podcast, too, so you can get the show on the go anytime. kcrw.com/Greater LA. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthew, Kelsey Gante, Eddie Sun, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Michael Stark, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Mike Vogel. and Christian Bordahl. All helped run the episode this evening. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your time. Thanks for that ear. Bye-bye.